Good morning, everyone. The meeting for the Conference Committee on Licensure Reform, House File 140, will come to order unofficially. We do not have a quorum yet of our conferees. So, members, what we're going to do is move to the side-by-side document because we all do know how to read. So for those who come late, they'll have to play catch-up. But we need to use our time this morning because we have many things going on today. Welcome, everyone, and thank you to all those who are in the audience for attending this conference. We look forward to your input as we proceed to a final product. So with that, I will call on our House Research and Senate Research from Nonpartisan. And I believe, Ms. Parra, you're going to begin, or?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So members, the R1 in your three-ring binder, and audience, if you're following along, we'll start with Article 1, R1.
Madam Chair and members, starting on page R1, Article 1 of HF 140 deals with the licensing board, and Article 2 deals with the licensing. So Section 1 of the House file is amends Section 122A06, the definitions. For a couple of the definitions, it simply substitutes the board name, changes from the Board of Teaching to the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, which I'll refer to as PELSB. And so the definitions of teacher and board are also in the Senate version. Those are their sections 1 and 2. And that language is the same. The House file on page R2 also adopts new definitions of field shortage and field shortage teacher preparation program and teacher preparation program provider. Section 2 amends the section on board membership, and the main changes there are in subdivision 2 to the composition of the board. The board will be made up of 11 members, 6 teachers, one superintendent from the metro, one from outside the metro, a staff member from an approved teacher preparation program provider, a principal, and a member of the public. Subdivision 2A addresses first appointments. Subdivision 4A amends language dealing with the administration. These are all ways that the board will be managed. And there's also language relating to the Department of Administration providing administrative services and Department of Education providing suitable offices.
Madam Chair, members, the Senate file has a different board composition. The Senate file has 11 board members. 9 board members, going from 11 to 9. Five of the members are teachers. There is one superintendent, one school district human resources director, then one elementary or secondary school principal, and then one member of the public that may be a current or a former school board member. We also have the provision on the first appointments and the timing of when their terms expire, obviously differing in the numbers because of the differing numbers of the board. In addition, we have the administration provisions with the department administration providing the board with administrative support services and the Commissioner of Education providing some office space up until a certain point. Another difference is the effective date. The Senate file has the board's term starting in January 1, 2018. Madam Chair and members, then the next section is about the meetings as well as the appointment of or hiring of an executive director in the Senate file. Then the the Senate file has the executive director with their duties as in 122A09 subdivision 6 and requires the Pelsby to review the performance of the executive director as well as set their salary.
Madam Chair, members, the House language, section 122A08, subdivision 2 remains the executive secretary and has the duties of the executive secretary provided in 122A09 subdivision 6. The executive director in the House version, that's addressed, that will be an appointment by the governor, and that's addressed in the previous section. And the effective date, as Ms. Butler noted, is different for a number of these provisions. In the House version, it's September 1st, 2017. The next couple of sections are the same in the House and the Senate versions, other than the effective dates. Those are substituting the board name in Section 4 of the Code of Ethics and Section 5 on the House version, advising members of the profession. Same for the next section, election of chair and offices, substitutes the name and different effective date. Section 7, this is amending 122A09 subdivision 4, and it requires the board to license teachers. Prohibits the board from delegating its authority to make licensing decisions and requires the board to evaluate candidates for compliance with statutory requirements. And then the language in paragraphs B, C, and D, actually going through several pages up through the end of that section on page R10, that language is recodified in other sections.
Madam Chair, members, the Senate file amends those sections, or excuse me, paragraphs, to allow the Pelsby to do the score setting and such for the board adapted skills examination, and then updating for tiers instead of the current license types, as well as making sure that the board can adopt rules for alternative teacher preparation programs and non-conventional programs and Montessori teacher training programs. So, Madam Chair, members, Section 9 of the Senate file and Section 8 of the House file, the Senate again updates for the change of the board from the Board of Teaching to the Pelsby, and also then requires teacher and administrative preparation programs to do reporting that's already existing, but disaggregating those reports by race.
Madam Chair and members, Section 8 on the House file, it is reports subdivision 4A, and there are a number of paragraphs there that you'll see stricken. So the language that remains in that subdivision is on lines 1029 to 1030, requiring the board to provide reports in accordance with Section 122A09, and that is where all these paragraphs that are stricken, those are recodified there, and that's effective July 1st, 2018. The next section, Section 9, Register of Persons Licensed, so that's very similar to the Senate language. That's substituting the board name, and we have different effective dates as with other provisions. Section 10 on the House side relates to board money, and the House has some additional sections there listed for administering those sections that are addressed in the subdivision, and again those have different effective dates. Section 11 of the House file, this provision deals with rules, and the difference there is it requires both chambers have language requiring the board to include description of the rule's effects on teacher supply and demand, and provides that a rule adopted by the board, if it's in conflict with session laws or statute, the statute prevails. The House adds language requiring the board to adopt rules relating to fields of licensure or permissions, and also to grade levels. In addition, paragraph F, the board may only adopt rules under specific authority in this subdivision.
Ms. Butler?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Finally, I can address you. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair and members, then the next section is section 13 in the Senate file, section 12, the House file. They're quite similar. There's the substitution for the Board of Teaching in Pelsby, but then the Senate file strikes language relating to a one-year professional license for Montessori-trained teachers, and then also strikes language relating to one-year waivers for certain career and technical educators, and then allows a candidate that is that has a career and technical certificate to apply for a Tier 1 license.
Excuse me, Ms. Butler. The meeting is officially called to order. Welcome, Representative Mariani. Please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, Section 12 on the House file, it's similar. The House adds non-conventional teacher residency programs as an example of the type of program that could receive a permission, and also has some additional language regarding the career and technical education certifications in Tier 1, and changes the language, whereas before it said that the board would strongly encourage programs to develop alternative pathways, that now it says require programs to develop alternative pathways. The next section is only in the House version. This is section 13, 122A091. As I said before, the language that was in a section we looked at previously, it had language regarding reports. That's now recodified and reorganized a little bit here in this section. That goes on to page R18. Section 14 is House-only language, and that again recodifies language that was previously in other sections or kind of scattered throughout other sections. So this has all the requirements relating to teacher preparation programs. The next section, section 15 on page R20, that's also House-only language, and that's codifies a new 122A093, and that's language that was already in statute, just recodified here. The next section, section 16, those are the same on the House and Senate, with the Senate has an effective date that simply substitutes the new board for the Department of Education. Section 17, this is same on the House and Senate, and it amends section 127A05, which is where the Department of Education currently does a supply and demand report on teachers. And under this section, the department will do that until 2020, and then that will later move to the new board. Section 18 amends section 214.04. Chapter 214 generally relates to state agencies, and so this, because of the way that this new board is set up, it carves it out of this statute that deals with how some of these other boards are administered and their relationships to other state agencies. The next section, section 19, that's House-only language, and that's, again, a change to chapter 214, where this had a provision for how the Board of Teaching, relating to officers and staff, because now we have some different, this would have some different provisions for the board of director, for the executive director, this new board was carved out of this section. And this is effective September 1st, 2017. The next section, section 20, this is the same on the House and the Senate, except for the effective date. And this simply substitutes the name, the names of the board. The next section, section 21, transfer of powers. This, again, is the same on the House and Senate, except for the effective date. And this provides that, this is session law, and provides that the responsibilities of the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education with respect to licensure and credentialing moves over to this new board, consistent with section 15039, and 15039 contains a number of provisions relating to transfer of personnel, property, etc.
Madam Chair, members, section 19 of the Senate file is a Senate-only provision that directs the governor to make appointments to the new board by September 1, 2017, with terms beginning January 1, 2018. Then the next section, section 20 in the Senate file, is similar to some other subdivisions in, or a subdivision in the House file. The Senate requires an implementation report from the new board to be submitted to the legislature on their progress for implementing the licensure system. Then section 21 of the Senate file and 22 of the House file is the advisor instruction, which is substituting the new board for the Board of Teaching.
Madam Chair and members, section 23, that's a House only provision, repeals subdivisions 5, 8, and 11 of section 122A09. Subdivisions 8 and 11 are recoded elsewhere, and subdivision 5 requires the Commissioner of Education to comment on rules proposed by the Board of Teaching. And that's effective September 1st, 2017. The next article, Article 2, that's licensure.
And Madam Chair and members, Section 1 of the Senate file, the Senate-only provision, it's a direction to the current Board of Teaching to issue a endorsement for dual enrollment instruction to high school teachers with an immediate effective date. Section 2 of the Senate file and Section 1 of the House file are the same except for the effective dates, and it's a substitution for validity of license, but adding in that the new board would be issuing licenses and when the licenses are in effect and how long they remain valid. Section 3 of the Senate file and Section 2 of the House file are the same about authority to issue licenses. There's just differences. The House file for their tiers does a new section of statutory section for each tier, so there's that breakout. And then, excuse me, the effective dates where the Senate has a January 1 effective date and the House file has a July 1, both of 2018. Then Section 4 of the Senate file and Section 3 of the House file amends 122A 18, Subdivision 2. There's a substitution, again, for the new board, for the Board of Teaching, and then and substituting the tiers as far as the skills exam and such. And this part, we talk about what the House file is.
Madam Chair and members, the House language, adds language regarding credentials of support personnel positions, and the language regarding teacher qualifications and preparation programs is recoded in other sections, and language regarding the one-year license is eliminated. The next section, Section 4 in the House file, those are the same in the House and Senate versions, and it substitutes, I'm sorry, it strikes some obsolete language regarding dates, and then it substitutes the board names.
Madam Chair, members, Section 6 is of the Senate files, the Senate-only provision, and it's a substitution of the new board for the commissioner with the coach qualifications and their code of ethics. Section 7 is another Senate-only provision that is, again, another substitution, striking the reference for the Board of Teaching so that it is the new board as far as colleges and universities and the technology strategies. Section 8 of the Senate file is similar to Section 5 of the House file. This is about substitute teaching. Essentially, the difference is the Senate file allows a license for either lifetime qualified short call or a long call substitute teacher if the person meets certain qualifications. Section 9 of the Senate file and Section 6 of the House file are the same except for the cross-references to the tiers that have different statutory sections but related to temporary military licenses. Section 10 of the Senate file and Section 7 of the House file are also similar with background checks and substituting the new board for the Board of Teaching, as well as then substituting the Board of School Administrators for the commissioner. And there's little differences if you turn to R31 about notification to the school district or the employing school if the teacher's license has been revoked. Then moving on, Section 11 of the Senate file, there is where we begin the tiers. So I think I will start instead of going back and forth, just explain the Senate tier because we have a different setup as far as having it in one section.
Thank you, Ms. Butler.
Okay. So the first part of the tiered section is direction that the new board needs to be the one licensing teachers and that they issue licenses to qualified candidates. Then it gets into the Tier 1 license is a one-year license with unlimited renewal and provides the qualifications for that license. I'm not sure if you want to go into the details there, but can kind of...
That's not necessary.
Okay,
thank you.
Say that's going to take a while. Then for the Senate file on R34 is the beginning of the Tier 2 license, which is a two-year license. There's up to two renewals, and then the qualifications for that license, or that tier of license. And then the Tier 3 begins on R36 for the Senate file language, and that is a three-year license with one renewal. And, excuse me, then on R38 is where the Senate requirements for Tier 4 license are. It's a five-year license with unlimited renewals. Then we have a subdivision 3 of our tiers at the bottom of R38, which is provides for assessment alternatives for a Tier 3 or Tier 4 licensure candidate if they don't attain a passing score on the skills exam after so many tries. There are other ways to meet that qualification.
Ms. Farah.
Madam Chair and members, House version, starting on page R31, the House, each tier is in its own subdivision. So the tier and each section has the requirements for the tier, the coursework, the term of the license, some limitations on the license were applicable. I won't get into the details of each one, but there are some differences and some similarities between the House and Senate for each of the tiers. And that's from the House file, that's effective July 1st, 2018. On page R39, that's what the next section is, and that's a house-only language. That codifies a new section, 122A-185, on teacher licensure assessments. This section consolidates teacher assessment provisions that were previously in other sections. It eliminates a provision requiring the exams for non-native English speakers, and eliminates the skills exam requirement for Tier 3 licenses. And that's all effective July 1st, 2018. The next section is a house-only section. That's 122A-186 on human relations. That recodifies language that was previously in 122A-18 and requires the board to adopt rules. Section 15, expiration and renewal. That is, subdivision 1 is similar for House and Senate. The House simply has those cross-references where the new tiers are codified. Subdivision 2, professional growth, those again are similar. The House has additional language, with the cross-references, and also stating that a teacher may satisfy the requirements of professional growth by submitting it the most recent evaluation or improvement plan. In the other subdivisions, that consolidates language regarding expiration and renewal that was previously in other sections. And that language is house only. The next section on page R42, licensure denial and appeal, this is a new section of law. And they are similar on the House and Senate side. The Senate has additional language setting a timeline for when the denial letter must go out, but otherwise they are the same. And this section sets out a process for informing candidates of the denial and appeal process. The Senate also has an effective date of July 1st, 2018. The next section, Section 17, bilingual and English second language licenses, those are similar. The House file substitutes the board name and adds cross-references to the tiers and breaks up paragraph subdivision 4 into two paragraphs to clarify that the where the break is, that these requirements apply only to teachers, that for programs that prepare teachers, English as a second language teachers.
The Senate file has an additional clause in subdivision 1 that requires the candidate to meet all other requirements for a teacher license that is issued under the tiered section. Then section 15 of the Senate file compared to section 18 of the House file, and actually section 15 and 16 of the Senate file go together, and they're just, for us, they're just a substitution for the new board for the Board of Teaching.
Madam Chair, members, the House language, for the paragraphs that they both have, those are the same. The House adds a new paragraph at the end of subdivision 2, requiring the board to report to appropriate law enforcement authorities when a license has been revoked, suspended, or there's an agreement relating to the teacher administration's inappropriate sexual conduct with a minor. The next section, section 8, of the House version. This recodes language from that was previously in another section relating to using the portfolio process to obtain a license. It substitutes the board name and requires the board to adopt rules, and it's effective July 1st, 2018.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate file section is a bit different. That the licensure via portfolio is submitted or requires a candidate to submit two portfolios, one portfolio for pedagogical competence and one for their content competence. And if they are adding a licensure field, they need to submit one portfolio for each field they're adding. Then the Section 18 of the Senate file and Section 19 of the House file are the same, again, just substitution for the new board. Section 19 of the Senate file is paired up with Section 20 of the House file. The Senate file, this is related to alternative teacher preparation programs and providers, and the Senate has a new section, they're replacing the current law and providing the eligibility requirements for a program as or for a provider, as well as what the program needs to have to be approved.
Madam Chair, members, the House version amends the existing law. So some of the language is the same between the House and Senate. The House modifies the list of entities that may establish an alternative teacher preparation program and eliminates some candidate requirements. Also modifies some of the program criteria and strikes some language regarding board approval. I believe that brings us to Section 27 on the House side.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members, we're on now at R52. So Section 20 on the Senate file is paired with Section 27 of the House file. The two sections are the same and are just a substitution with the new board for the Board of Teaching. Section 21 of the Senate file and Section 28 of the House file relating to teachers of deaf and hard of hearing students and their licensure requirements are the same. It's again another substitution with the new board. Section 22 of the Senate file and Section 29 of the Senate file again are the same. Both are the substitution with the same effective date. Section 23 of the Senate file is paired with Section 30 of the House file. They are quite similar. The Senate amends the headnote. And then we have obviously the differences in our tiers as far as we have one section and there are other sections, multiple sections in the House file. Section 24 of the Senate file is compared to Section 31 of the House file. They are the same, except for the Senate file has a July 1, 2018 effective date. Section 25 of the Senate file is compared to Section 32 of the House file, and those two sections are the same with the substitution with the new board. Section 26 of the Senate file is compared to Section 33 of the House file. The two sections are the same except for the effective date. The Senate file has a January 1, 2018 effective date, and the House file has a September 1, 2017 effective date. Section 27 of the Senate file and Section 34 of the House file, again, are the same except for the effective date. Again, it's the Senate effective date of January 1, 2018 versus September 1, 2017. Section 28 of the Senate file and Section 35 of the House file are the same, and have the same effective date. Section 29 of the Senate file and Section 36 of the House file are, again, the same. Then Section 30 of the Senate file is a Senate-only provision. And this is related to a teacher of special education license review as a direction to the new board to review all the licenses, look for opportunities for cross-categorical licenses for teachers of special education. And then on R57, Section 31 of the Senate file is compared to Section 37 of the House file, and it is essentially transferring licenses under the jurisdiction of the Board of Teaching to the new board based on what type of license the license holder currently has. The Senate has a subdivision that the House file does not have for teachers with a three-year license. Then Section 32 of the Senate file is a Senate-only provision. It's a direction to the Board of Teaching to change the rules for the academic and behavioral strategist licensure position for candidates.
Madam Chair, members, Section 38 on the House version, that's the House-only version, and it allows the new board to grant a one-year extension for a permission waiver variance or temporary limited license that's in effect on September 1st of this year. Section 39 is the repealer, and both versions repeal some sections. The House repeals some additional ones, and some of those are recodified. Some of those relate to Commissioner of Education role that is eliminated in licensure. Article 3, non-teacher credentialing, they're the same on the House and Senate version except for the effective date. And that provision simply substitutes the board name in the section that relates to rulemaking.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pera and Ms. Butler, for that walkthrough. Are there any questions from members? Members, I'm going to turn to introductions since we have not covered that yet, so that those listening and those in the audience know who we are. So, members, I'll start, and then I'll move to Senator Pratt, and we'll proceed around the table through Mr. Cook, and then pick up with DFL House Research. I'm Sandra Erickson, and I chair in the House here the Education Innovation Policy Committee, and I'm also the author of House File 140. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Eric Pratt, I represent Senate District 55, which is Scott County, the communities and school districts of Prior Lake, Shakopee, Jordan, and I chair the Senate Education Policy Committee.
I'm Tricia Elite, and I'm the Committee Administrator for Senate Education Policy Committee.
I'm John Deshi, and I'm the Legislative Assistant to Senator Eric Pratt.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Amory Butler, the Nonpartisan Senate Counsel.
Madam Chair, my name is Bjorn Arneson, and I'm a Legislative Analyst for the Senate K-12 Committees.
Madam Chair, I'm Susan Kent, State Senator for District 53 in the East Metro, Woodbury, Maplewood, and Oakdale, and I'm the Ranking Member on the Education Policy Committee.
Madam Chair, Dana Elling, Senate DFL Research.
Madam Chair, Ed Cook, Senate Republican Caucus Research.
Mars.
Madam Chair, Mars Beltran E. Redquist, DFL House Research.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Carlos Mariani, State Representative of St. Paul, and my apologies for being late this morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Peggy Bennett, State Representative for 27A, which is Albert Lea and kind of much of that southern central area of Minnesota, and it's great to be here.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Amy Roberts, I'm House GOP Research.
Madam Chair, Christina Pera from House Research.
Tom Brennan, CLA, Education Policy Committee.
Andrew Hassett, Committee Administrator for the Education Innovation Policy Committee in the House.
Thank you very much. You're all vital. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say we also, on the Senate side, we'll have Senator Karen Housley, who is traveling today. Senator Housley sat on the Board of Teaching study group throughout the summer, so she's very familiar with the topic.
And thank you, Senator Pratt. And members, in your three-ring binder, or I guess it's a four-ring binder, is the 2016 Legislative Study Group report on educator licensing. And Senator Pratt, I know that you were not a part of that, neither were you, Representative Bennett. So I mean, I mean Representative Bennett. Yes, I know you were Senator Pratt. I meant Representative Bennett was not. So if you want to check on page 6, where we have stated the recommendations, just to review that we came to the conclusion that we should have one entity, that we should leave BOSA, which is the Board of School Administrators, on their own for now except for licensing matters, that we would adopt a tiered structure, that we would support the incorporation of the unique and invaluable skill sets of CTE instructors within the tiered licensure framework, in other words, not a carve-out, and that we would recodify the sections that are misplaced or needed to be reorganized in all the sections in regard to teacher licensure. So members, in a nutshell, that's what the report consisted of, and I am grateful that we have sitting on this committee, many of us who served on that. Members, now we're going to turn to testimony, and we'd like to hear from the commissioner first because she's taken the time out to join us this morning. Members, what we're looking for is your comments on this proposal, House File 140, so any input you could give us before we begin our actual negotiating would be much appreciated. Welcome, Commissioner. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Brandi Caselius, Commissioner of Education. Thank you for having me, Madam Chair, members, committee members. I first want to thank the committee for working so hard, and both chairs especially, for your attention to this matter. We've met many times over the past several months to discuss the items within both bills, both my staff and myself personally. So you're aware of a number of the concerns that I have already. I've outlined them both with both chairs of your respective committees. So I won't go step by step. I'll spend most of my time today testifying on Tier 1, which is for me the most problematic piece, because I do recognize and I understand that I have a different position than many of the school board members or superintendents on this matter. So I'd like to explain why I think I'm coming forward with these recommendations, especially because I think as we balance the current problem of teacher supply, we don't want to rush to decisions that maybe might down the road lessen the quality of the teachers that are in front of our kids. And I want us to just really think about that. So I'm going to spend most of my time talking about a couple of provisions in mostly Tier 1, and I'll mention a few in the others. The first is there's a cultural competence a requirement now called Human Relations Course, and I just want to be sure that that's in the final report. It's spoke to differently in both the Senate and the House version. The House does have some provisions for it, I think in Tier 3 and 4, and we need to be sure that we retain that Tier 1 licensed teachers do still need that requirement. As we become more demographically diverse within our schools, it's even more important that our teachers are familiar and understand different cultures of which they'll be teaching. Secondly, I do think that since you're setting up a professional board, that the board actually should have final sign-off on all tiers, Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, and Tier 4. I have no problem with the local school boards reviewing these portfolios of teachers. I do, however, think they're underestimating the amount of work it is to and the amount of time it's going to take. I think local school boards think that their superintendent's going to do it, but in small rural districts, the superintendent does everything. And reviewing the licensure qualifications of an out-of-state teacher can take hours, if not days, to do. And I think that they're going to become quickly aware that it's quite cumbersome and challenging to review those qualifications, especially if they're reviewing them yearly. I would suggest it's not in either bill, but I had a parent suggest this to me, that there be transparency in the number of Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, and Tier 4 licenses at both the school level on their website as well as on the district website, so that they can see how many teachers are in what tier at the school district and at the school site. They also, I also believe that that would, if it ends up in a final bill, even though I'm against unlimited numbers of times a tier one licensed teacher could be licensed, if it does end up being that way, it should be that those unlimited renewals are also transparently reported, the number of times someone's been renewed more than 3 years in a row. I do believe that if you are going to exempt in tier one teachers from having a bachelor's degree, that should only be for CTE professionals who are earning a credential and have the number of hours required to earn that credential. You know, that differs from a plumber to a mechanic to a forester. So I would say that that would be okay for an associate's degree or credential with the proper number of hours for CTE only. I feel strongly we should not have teachers without a bachelor's degree teaching in the elementary grades or the middle or high school grades. I think that that's problematic. So I would strongly urge you not do that. I do think that if you do have an associate's degree and you're teaching at the secondary level in Tier 2 or Tier 1, that you ought to have to take the content level exam to ensure that you have the background and knowledge in order to teach a higher level of the standards that are required. Our standards are very rigorous, and teachers should have a steeped understanding of our standards. I have a question about transferring of the teacher license from local board to local board in Tier 1. I know that the House protects that's just at the local board level, and when a teacher transfers to a different school district, that the next school district would be starting over, but I don't think there's a similar provision on the Senate side. I want to talk just briefly about teacher evaluation. I think in both House and Senate, correct me if I'm wrong, all teachers must be part of the teacher evaluation program that is locally adopted and agreed to from the school boards and the local units at each school district. I just want to be sure that that applies to all Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3, 4 teachers, that they would all be evaluated. I think there's some, in the Senate side, there's some different language, and I just want to be sure that they're supposed to be part of a mentorship program. I just want to be sure, and it says evaluation. I'm not sure if the evaluation and the mentorship program are the same thing, but I just want to make sure that all teachers in a school district, regardless of what tier you're in, will be evaluated under the district's plan. I also think that you should not be able to get an unlimited license in Tier 1 or Tier 2, and that you should have to demonstrate for renewal that you are an effective teacher. I think that and we don't need that at the board level, or the board wouldn't need to have that, but the district would have to assure so that data could still be personally kept at the school district level and the school level. That they would just have to give an assurance that the teacher was not less than effective and not on an improvement plan. In the Senate side, Tier 3 allows for only one renewal. I would suggest that that could be more than one renewal on Tier 3, but I do think that you have to have a teacher prep program at Tier 2 and Tier 3. It says either or. You could either pass all exams or a prep program, but I do think you need to, once you enter Tier 1 is really for entry level. Tier 2, you should start be enrolling in a prep program. Tier 3, you should be a fully continuing contract licensed teacher with an opportunity, as long as you're effective, to continue to renew that continuing contract. I know that I think it's in both sides that Tier 4 is automatically given to any teacher who's going to continue their contract. I would suggest, and I've talked with both chairs about this, that Tier 4 be reserved for master teachers who are peer reviewers or teachers who are nationally board certified or have national teacher or state teacher of the year award or some other type of additional professional recognition within their field. This would allow, instead of putting all the current teachers into a tier four, which is your highest level tier, this would allow for the body to maybe do some incentives to get teachers to a higher level of professional status to be peer reviewers and mentor teachers and others, get master's degree, or provide an incentive with this body. I've suggested maybe a way to increase their salaries. So, for instance, in Tennessee, if you're nationally board certified, you are given $10,000 more a year in salary. So it's something that you could pilot if everybody wasn't in it, so you don't restrict yourself. So I would say that the professional standard of a continuing license would be Tier 3, and then the Tier 4 would be something even more special to bring for teachers to strive through. And maybe that would tie into some assistant principal duties and being able then to, you know, go up to enter into that and get aspiring assistant principals. Finally, let me talk about the alternative certification. Alternative certification, there's some confusing language about observed classroom experience. I just want to be sure that that does not eliminate the student teaching portion. I do think all teachers need student teaching in their preparation programs. You know, they just don't, they just can't land in a classroom. I think also not requiring a nonprofit organization to collaborate with a higher education institution or a prep group, approved prep program is problematic. And also eliminating the requirements becoming a teacher of record and eliminating those requirements for a bachelor's degree or a 3.0 GPA just lowers the quality of teachers going into the program. So I would strongly suggest that you look at those components for the alternative teacher prep program, that we not water down alternative teacher prep. I think those are my comments I'd like to make, and I continue to look forward to working with you. I'll take any questions that you have. Or
thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for taking the time.
Oh, I have one more.
Madam, yes, Commissioner, please.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I forgot also the teacher and supply and demand report. If the staff is going to be at the professional board, we won't have any staff to do that report, so I just think it should move with the board. Also, in terms of space and location of the board, because so many people associate the board with the Minnesota Department of Education, it's going to, and most of the staff who are currently, or all of the staff actually, the way that you have it structured, will transfer to the new professional board. If that board physically is still housed at the Department of Education, I don't think people will think that we've done anything. And I think it will still lend to a lot of confusion, because currently it's there. I have no authority over the board, and people think that we are commingling and that I have authority over the board. So I think that the board working with the Department of Administration to find a new space in an appropriate time frame, in an appropriate time frame to transition, you know, it's not that we want to just boot them out, but I think as they establish themselves, it would make a lot of sense for them to establish themselves separate from the department. So those are just my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can you tell us how many staff will be involved in the transfer to the new board?
I think it's 12. 12, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
And I counted 13 items. I may be off, but that's my lucky number. So hopefully that means this whole bill is going to come together very nicely.
But the, I don't think I have everything.
Oh, okay. Commissioner, I just want to ask very quickly about your sharing on what you believe should be final sign-off on all tiers in terms of duties for this for the new board. And you shared that concern that local boards and superintendents might be asking them to do something that might be difficult to do, particularly given the the size of a particular school district. And Madam Chair, one of the things that conjures for me is some of the, and actually it was bipartisan concern over the length of time, response, review of the present board in the past few years, particularly as we open the gate, broader for, excuse me, out-of-state in particular, applicants. And I would certainly hate for us to set anyone else up for that, because I think both sides of the aisle thought that that did not reflect well on our state and really bucked up, our process. Are there, and you can certainly have your staff get back to us, beyond that concern, are there legal concerns relative to the timing of the superintendent and the school board to be able to do the due diligence that I think we want them to do relative to this?
Commissioner. Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I do think that school districts will absorb some liability. And I think that they take the risk of reviewing those credentials. I think also with background checks, I didn't talk about that, but I think the language here needs to be strengthened, that the board would get a copy of the background check. As you read in the paper and open up your tweets and see in the news, there have been incidences of across the nation, not just here in Minnesota, of maltreatment of children. And this is absolutely a concern that we may have people in the classroom who didn't have a proper background check because it's not standardized. You know, you'll have 325 school districts, 150 charters making these decisions, and unless there's some sort of strengthening of this background check and of the review of the credentialing, like people are trained on how to do it, you could have from the worst case scenario where they're just rubber stamping and getting a warm body in the room to where, you know, they're really doing a very thorough job, they've been properly trained and understand all the credentialing that's needed. There's absolutely no way that a local school board has the experience or the credentials in order to review 50 different out-of-state teacher prep programs and licensing requirements. It would just be a profound amount of knowledge, and we have people who have been in the department doing this work for 30 years, and it still takes them quite a bit of time to do it. So Nels can probably, and his staff can talk to it more about what it might take on the average time for just one license. But I think it's a big challenge. It will be a big challenge, and I don't believe they fully know what they're asking for.
Representative Mariani, follow-up. Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just a couple of questions and a follow-up on that, Commissioner. In the Senate bill, we're just simply asking for an associate's degree or experience on the CTE side and a bachelor's degree on the on the core credit side for Tier 1. And I guess I'm confused as far as your comments around Tier 1 and having to do the credentialing at the school board level. Right. Seems like we've taken some of that requirement away, and could you maybe explain a little bit more of what you're thinking?
Commissioner. Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, I'll clarify. I think that on Tier 1, if you're going to have a CTE teacher, that they are credentialed in the number of hours that's required in their profession and that they hold an associate's degree. Okay. That's for Tier 1. If it is a content-level teacher, that teacher would, I think they could have an AA on the House side, Bill, if they're any grade level. But I'm saying I think they should have a bachelor's degree as a minimum for elementary school, kindergarten through 12th grade. For Tier 1, I'm saying if you teach middle or high school, in addition to a bachelor's degree, you ought to demonstrate on the content exam that you understand the level of rigor that's going to be required to teach our standards at the middle and high school level. Because obviously teaching calculus or algebra 2 or even algebra 1 in 8th grade is different than teaching addition, subtraction, and simple equations in the earlier grades.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, though, because maybe I'm confused as far as where you're going with your answer to Representative Mariani, but you were talking about how local school districts couldn't do the comparison of the 50 teacher prep programs, and yet that's really not in either the House or the Senate version. And so that's, I'm trying to understand your concern about the local boards, local superintendents, and administrators doing that verification.
Commissioner. Madam Chair, maybe Senator Pratt, you can clarify your question. Maybe we're both misunderstanding each other. I'm talking about the CTE teachers and the difference of licensing requirements in all 50 states. So if on Tier 1 the local school board is reviewing their professional credentials, then they would have to, you know, if they have somebody from Kansas, they would have to know what their teacher prep programs were and what their teacher licensing was in order to give them a license.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you.
Unless I'm misunderstanding.
Madam Chair, it's my understanding, Commissioner, that those out-of-state credentials would be going into Tier 3 in the Senate plan and would be fully reviewed by the Board of Teaching, and yet in Tier 1, that's not the requirement in either the House or the Senate for the teaching credential. Now, if we're talking about a credential for electrical repair,
right,
something along that line, is that your concern, or are you really talking about a teacher prep program that wouldn't be applicable to Tier 1?
Commissioner, as I said in my comments earlier, I think all teachers, Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, and Tier 4, ought to do a teacher prep program outside of CTE teachers. I think that's where the disconnect is coming between the two plans and what I'm recommending.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then, Commissioner, I just wanted to ask you about, you mentioned cultural competency and human relations. Nowhere in statute is a requirement that a teacher do human relations or cultural competency. It's all board approved in statute. And so neither the Senate doesn't make any changes. I think the House made one reference change. Can you help me understand your concern with this bill along the lines of cultural competency and human relations?
Commissioner. Good question. It does have in the section, it says that, let me get to it, that the board would make rules around the human relations requirement. However, like you are right, it says it does not explicitly say it is required. So if you turn to page R41, where you talk about what the requirements are, so if you see on R40, the section on human relations, you'll see there that it says the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board must adopt rules that provide how a candidate may meet the human relations coursework requirement. Okay? Then if you go down to subsection 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you have requirements on professional growth, behavior intervention, PBIS training, reading preparation, mental illness now is in there. I would suggest adding a subsection 6 to be very clear that cultural competence is required, and adding language in there, because it's hinted to that they may meet the human relations coursework requirement, and what I'm saying, it ought to be a requirement. And it's also, and maybe Representative Mariani can talk to it more to this, but when we passed all the LEAPS legislation, there's a lot of reference throughout the education statutes now to cultural competency. It just seems to me that we ought to be more explicit about it.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, we've looked quite a bit into cultural competency, and every reference that we've seen in statute to cultural competency goes back to a board-approved requirement. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting
you mean
that
the local
we
board?
Add
local board approved?
No.
The professional
board, the current board of teaching. Are you suggesting that we add a new requirement in statute?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Senator Pratt, I do believe that we need a subsection 6 here on cultural competency, so that it's clearly explicitly said what we mean by that.
I just wanted to add that under the House language in Section 14 on human relations, the reason we use the may is that The board could accept training programs like the Peace Corps, VISTA, Teacher Corps, in lieu of completing that component. So that's why we have it in May. Because there are a variety of ways to complete it.
That's right. Madam Chair, it says that, but you also have in there exemptions. So you've listed out which you would accept as exceptions to a cultural competence, for instance, course that you would have to take. So I believe they could also probably demonstrate it through the portfolio process.
Correct. Are there other questions for the commissioner? Mr. Onstead is here. Would you come forward, please, since you're from the licensing division? Welcome, Mr. Onstead. Say your name for the record, and then would you comment on this proposal from your perspective as the exiting director of licensing?
Good morning. And my name is Nels Onstead. I'm the current director of educator licensing for MDE. To my right is the licensing supervisor, Debbie O'Dell. Debbie, would you introduce yourself?
Good morning. Debbie O'Dell, educator licensing.
Thank you, Ms. O'Dell.
I think one of the maybe the overarching thing is I have a perspective that is largely different probably than those of you that have served on the task force, those people who are in the audience, those people that represent the stakeholder groups, and so on. My perspective really comes from my last year and a half spent as the education director trying to provide increased service to our districts, our candidates, and just the state of Minnesota in regard to the teachers and our ultimately the children inside of our districts. And as I know, that is your ultimate goal as well. There are sort of three overarching, I'm going to call them concerns, but I want you to know that I concur that there needs to be one board that is doing this work. The piece that I and Debbie and others, when we talk about this, that we become concerned about our first is just that level of service that will be provided to our districts and our charter schools. Right now, those are the people that are calling, they're applying to us for special permissions, for limited licenses, for those kinds of things. And when we are, and I know the details always come out as we work through things, but like others who are doing this work, that lack of really knowing how things are going to fall into place with the jigsaw puzzle becomes a point of question with how are we going to be able to answer questions to districts and to charters. Second of all is the questions that applicants are going to be having coming out of our institutions and out of out-of-state applicants. Where do they fit in? How are we going to be able to answer those questions? We are already getting questions from those kinds of people. How is this going to affect my license as we move in? And of course, we don't like to say, we don't know for sure, that we'll have to figure these details out and we'll be able to answer those questions specifically. And thirdly is the number of resources in order to be able to devise and articulate these details of this right now, which is I'm going to call a skeleton, articulated and communicated accurately to our stakeholders, whether it's the districts, the higher ed institutions, which I'm sure others will speak to as well, but training certifying officers, and even just to staff in of them themselves to be able to answer the questions and provide the service. Because in my opinion, the entire licensing division is here to serve those people, and when we don't have the answers to it, it makes us nervous and it causes some anxiety. And I understand that there's no possible way that we could have all these things on May 1st of 2017. However, we do want to make sure that there's, our recommendation would be that there is enough time for leadership and a new board to be able to have time to clarify those answers, to be able to create communications, to be able to create a changeover, so to speak, into a new system. And those are very likely things that have been on your radar as well. But those are things that when we're inside of the licensing and are doing the work that are, I'll call them, I need to call them concerns because they are. They're concerns that we are going to be able to have time to change over and be able to have time to understand what new rules, new legislation means, to be able to interpret, to be able to have a new system. By new system, I mean a new application system, an online application put into place, which we don't really get to have any control over the amount of time that is, but we do understand that it's not going to be a flip the switch and we move from our current licensing system to a new tiered system, and there just gets to be a number of questions that are down in the weeds about how that's going to work.
So, Mr. Onstad, your concern is primarily about the timeline and the differences in these two proposals, this actually House File 140, what you have spoken to. How will you be able to provide the service? How will and time to answer questions, but also time to get the application system up and running. So your solution is then what, Mr. Anstead?
I don't know that I have a exact timeline in place, but I believe a solution would be to have a recommendation of a phasing in of how this would work. Phase one, and I believe this may be overarching some of the conversations that I've heard about it, as maybe just to be understood. However, for licensing staff and board of teaching staff be able to understand that a new board is going to be put into place in phase one, a new executive director, a new leadership in general, and to be able to establish and work within the timelines of rulemaking, to be able to allow for time to receive training, receive information, receive clarification on the details of the licensing system, and then to be able to also have time to update all the forms and all the website information and to really develop a very clear communication. Chair Erickson, one of the things that I think about quite a lot about this is I sort of see it as a very similar to two school districts that are going to be consolidating. And when they consolidate, these things are done because we need new money, we can provide better resources, we can provide more efficient services, and those things are great. But if we just take just the licensing staff together, and if we're not under the teaching staff of those two school districts, and we try to merge them, we try to merge two master agreements, we try to merge two student handbooks, we try to merge master schedules, we try to merge all those things, and if we leave the teaching staff out of it, they're really not knowing what classes am I going to be teaching. If I teach a grade level, that causes anxiety, and eventually what we end up happening is two communities who do not get along with each other, and that in no is not the goal. Our goal, again, is to provide that service and to make sure that we are able to make sure that there is that communication moving out to our stakeholders. When I speak to my fellow superintendents who are colleagues of mine and principals and teachers, they know something is happening with this tiered system and something is happening. They certainly do not know the details, and nor do they have time to really get into the weeds with it like it is right now. And I think it's going to be paramount that we're able to communicate those things effectively so we don't have some sort of decreased communication and popularity, so to speak, amongst those groups.
Thank you, Mr. Onstad. Ms. O'Donnell, any closing comment or anything to add?
Madam Chair, probably one of the concerns that I have is in the Senate file, there's a requirement that we issue or deny a license within 30 days. That requirement seems concerning because right now during the summer months, under our current system, we have many applications that go past 30 days. Moving into a new tiered licensure system, we're not even going to know until we're into the system how those reviews are going to go. So to set up a 30-day timeline, I think, is kind of harsh for our staff and causes extra stress. I just want to add, I'm not sure if anybody's looked at some other requirements for the basic skills testing. That is the number one call we get to our office. Many times, whether it's Minnesota grads or out-of-state grads, we have teachers that have taught out of state for 10 years and haven't taken a math class, and they're teaching Phi Ed or art or elementary ed, and they can't pass the basic skills math. It just seems like there should be other requirements or other options available for those candidates. Perhaps completion of their teacher preparation program could say that they met the basic skills requirement for reading, writing, and math. It's just our staff fields so many questions and so many callers crying, and they've taken these tests. I mean, we print them off, and they've taken them and paid this money many, many, many times, and they just want to teach. So I just want to throw that out there because it is the number one call we get in our office.
Thank you, both of you, and Commissioner as well. We do need to hear from Ms. Doan, who is the director of the Board of Teaching. So thank you very much. We will certainly take into consideration and stay in communication with us as well. Thank you. Ms. Doan. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Erin Doan, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Teaching. I, like Commissioner Casilius, this morning have probably a number of issues I could share. I first want to thank all of you for what has become a very long conversation, but a very important one for the state and the educators in our state. Many of you at the table have worked tirelessly over probably almost 2 full years at this point to make sure that we're getting the system right. So I'm going to limit my comments today to those pieces of the puzzle that are really just kind of the overarching themes, and certainly through staff and through those who have been asking continued questions, I will continue to feed the nuts and bolts as we go along. I want to start with really just 3 overarching issues. Two of which the commissioner has touched on already. I want to talk a little bit about teacher testing and the way that that is incorporated into the tiered licensure models. Certainly testing has always has been for a long time a part of our teacher licensure structure. It remains, though, one of 3 legs or one of 3 measures for a licensed teacher in our state. Our licensure system was built around testing as one measure of competency, certainly preparation and content and pedagogy as another measure, and certainly a performance assessment or some level of student teaching where you are observed and coached and assessed on the way that you are operating within a classroom. In the understanding of the Board of Teaching, all 3 of those components are necessary to measuring the capabilities of a licensed teacher going forward. And we just want to make sure that as you're looking at those tiered licensure models, that we don't end up, because of shortage conversations, leaning on a pathway where testing is relied on as the answer or the measure of competency for licensing our teachers. In terms of that, just that, the importance of pedagogy, I'll just go back to the fact that as we were looking at those tiered licensure models, whether it be through testing or portfolio, that there are existing in the models currently a number of different pathways that would allow someone to be a professionally licensed teacher without pedagogy training. And I really want to go back to the importance of not only being very savvy about one's content area, but being very savvy about how you're applying that content in a developmentally appropriate way, being able to adjust to the different developmental needs of the students sitting in front of you, and being able to differentiate curriculum to make sure that you are helping every child in those classrooms grow. So I want to really, and without offering the criticisms or suggestions that we've talked about ad nauseum at this point, I just want to bring us back to some of those overarching questions that you can all be asking yourselves as you're walking through your understanding of the laws. Like the commissioner and certainly Mr. Onstead and Ms. O'Dell have mentioned, I'd also like to bring us back to a review of the timelines for change. Again, you all have invested large amounts of time, as have we, in making sure that we are fixing a broken system and that we are getting it right. We want to make sure that we are not pushing some of those changes forward in a way that are going to make things tougher for schools, for teachers themselves, or perhaps even to result in a lack of retention of our existing teachers as we impose new requirements that may not have been there before. At this point, we've heard a lot of deadlines or effective dates within the language that begin on either September 1st of 2017, of January 1st of 2018, of July 1st of 2018. Really, I think those are the three major dates that we've heard for most things. Mm-hmm. What I'd like to suggest for your consideration is that we look at a transfer of power and some of those early deadlines to be seen January 1st of 2018, so that we are also allowing time for the state systems that support us in terms of procurement, in terms of minute, in terms of our broad IT structure, that we're getting those things right before we flip the switch, as Ms. Ronson mentioned. Finally, just a couple of other items that were brought forward by the MDE team, and just wanted to comment on those. I think the supply and demand report comments that you heard today were extremely valid. I've pointed out in the past that that supply and demand report has been a responsibility of the department, and specifically a responsibility of the Director of Educator Licensing for a number of years without really any supports or without any real means to be gathering research to make sure that the recommendations or the findings that are made within that report are valid. If we want that report to be something that the state of Minnesota can base policy decisions on, we really want to make sure that that's accurate information. Certainly, it's been the best report that it can be under the certain circumstances, but also would maybe like to see, is there a possibility for assistance from DEED or from other state agencies who are producing that kind of information for other other professions? Lastly, I'd just like to point out the fact that we still have just a very few number of licenses that exist within statute, while the majority of licenses exist within rule. What that does is often cause either the stakeholder groups that are invested in those license areas or the teachers who are teaching within those license areas to come to the board to look for resolution to some of their individual concerns to those licensure areas, and the board really can't attend to those because those are statutory concerns. I'll give you the examples of the blind visually impaired license, the deaf hard of hearing license, and the oral license, for which there is a great amount of discussion happening right now. So just another eye to the detail as you're looking at those things to make some really reasoned decisions about where those items should live in the grand scheme as we're trying to recodify statute and rule. A couple of supports that I'll mention briefly, and then certainly we'll stand for any questions. The Board of Teaching at this point is very grateful for the work that you have done to make sure that teacher voice is represented in a teacher majority board. That is an important piece to our profession, and thank you for your work on really thoughtfully considering the composition. We would also like to include with that composition the reconsideration of maintaining inclusion in Chapter 214 with the other standards boards in the state, just for the purposes of consistency. And I believe that that has happened in the Senate version, but not in the House currently. In terms of licensure, the alternative pathway statute changes in the Senate language are something that we have worked very closely with a number of education stakeholders on, including the members of the Career and Technical Education Task Force. We certainly support the language that is in the Senate version and ask for broad consideration, knowing the number of people that have been working diligently at the table to come to those conclusions. And then finally, providing flexibility to school districts is something that has is evident in both the House and Senate versions in different ways, but just would like to ask that that remains a priority, that the ability to provide flexibility to school districts in the Senate currently, there's language allowing for the adoption of rules to bolster alternative preparation and non-conventional programming. In the House version of House language, there is an allowance for permission to adopt rules for licensed teachers to teach outside of their licensure field. We want to make sure that the really strong, flexible option that we've provided for school districts to allow licensed, trained teachers to be serving in shortage areas is one that's put at the forefront of your decision-making as well. With that, I certainly will submit any other comments electronically following our discussion today, and we'll stand for any last-minute questions that you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Stone, and thank you for your years of service to the state from the perspective of being a director of the Board of Teaching. I know that is no easy job, and I, on behalf of this conference committee, thank you for that. I want to ask you about the number of applications that come in for the community expert, and if you can tell us to what extent those applications have not been reviewed by the locals, because I suspect they have to be before they're approved presently in your process by the board, and then how many repeats there are every year for that perhaps same district and perhaps even for that same community expert. Could you provide an answer to that or provide us with some data on that? Ms. Stone.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the community expert permissions, those permissions are requested by the district on behalf of an individual, and they are a request for a teacher who is not trained to be a teacher to be providing credit to students within a particular district. Because Minnesota has not had an emergency teacher license over the last however many years, I'm not sure what that number might be, the community expert permission, which was put in place for a very limited capacity, people to offer a particular skill to students, has then become sort of this emergency license that districts have been needing. In terms of the number that are applied for on an annual basis, that has been anywhere from, a few years ago, roughly 600 to 700, to what we now see as well over 1,000 on an annual basis. The board has worked with school districts to really encourage those that have been teaching on community expert status to move into teacher preparation programs, especially if they're coming forward for a second or third request. So while there hasn't been a definite cutoff after 3 years, that has been the message back to districts, is to say at a certain point this person needs to be pursuing professional training in that area. There's one more strand to your question, which I'm sorry.
I'll interject this question. How many denials have there been over your serving as the executive director of community expert applications? Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, without actually knowing that number off the top of my head, I would say less than 50 probably over my tenure. Certainly the board is very responsive to the district needs that are out there and are just wanting to see that there is a rational explanation for why we would choose to put an untrained person in front of our students before looking at other options. For the majority of those who are denied, it's usually a direct mismatch between their training or experience and the teaching assignment that they are asked to fulfill. Or the other thing that we do see more and more frequently as the numbers increase are the applications are sometimes filled out by staff within districts where they are using, in terms of being expedient, using copy-paste techniques, or there might be misleading information in the application that refers to he instead of she or refers to the wrong name or something like that. So if they are denied, that is indeed sometimes the issue, is having to go back to the district and say, I don't think we have the appropriate information going forward.
And Ms. Stone, during your service, my other question was, how many repeats have there been? Because I believe I know of some that are close to a dozen years. Would you comment on whether that's factual or that's rumor, or maybe you can't answer that? Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, I don't think that I know of any personally that are at 12 years, but are there some that have gone to 7 or 8 years? Yes, I think that's true. Very often we would see that in areas where there may be a particular skill that's required that there isn't a direct training pathway for. So in this case, CTE areas would be a particular area where we might see that.
And finally, Ms. Stone, on renewal credits, the process that we teachers use for our renewal. When we look at the clock hours, and the commissioner and I have discussed this process, clock hours, renewal hours, what has the board done in regard to that? Have you had discussions about that needing reform? Because I know that that's in your purview rather than in the district, although, in my district it was one person within the union who collected all of the information and, really kept the records for all of us and then told us, what we did or did not have to renew. So any comment on restructuring, reform of that process? Is it professional enough? Maybe that's not a question you want to answer, but, is there work that needs to be done in that process, in that realm?
Madam Chair, thank you for that question. The board actually, at the beginning of much of the work that's in front of us today, have been going through a process to look at the restructuring of licensure renewal with concern that necessarily seat hours necessarily was not the key to professional educator growth. And so the board has looked at a realignment to in-task standards for a means of providing a different licensure renewal structure, looked at ways for trying to connect to the professional growth and development plan that teachers are required to be conducting within their school districts. Certainly those who are closer to that teacher and the teacher themselves are going to understand what their needs for growth are better than looking at a statewide system of kind of a one-size-fits-all professional development plan. So I would say that that work was then kind of put on hold as we started to look at some of the broader issues, and I would expect that it will be an issue that returns to the new board quite quickly as well.
And Ms. Stone, how about agreements that deal with reciprocity? What's been the progress in that area?
Madam Chair, with a lot of those agreements, I would say the two that we were closest to were with the state of Wisconsin and with the state of North Dakota. There has been leadership change in both of those states, which caused us to go backwards a little bit in our discussion. But I think at this moment in time, if we took a snapshot, what is making others leery is they don't really know what the terms are for the state of Minnesota. So once we're able to finalize where we are in the big picture in terms of our reform in this initiative, those conversations will be easier again. I think the other thing is that we were seeing a lot of give in terms of the Minnesota side of the equation. We wanted to give people credit for the tests that they were bringing in, for the experience that they were bringing in, and we were not receiving the same, I'll just use the word reciprocity, for Minnesota candidates crossing the border going the other direction. So I don't think that's an insurmountable piece of the equation, but definitely one that needs more conversation.
And Ms. Stone, in regard to rulemaking, what has been going on at the board level on rulemaking? Can you update us on that?
Madam Chair, just before we started the intensive discussions with both committees at the beginning of this session, the board did release a rule draft that outlined the board's wishes for tiered licensure. At this time, we are holding that rule draft to wait for the outcome of this legislative session. If we were to adopt rules as they stand right now, chances are they would be mostly either in conflict or confusing the statutes that you're proposing putting forward. So as soon as there is something in place at the end of this session, that rule will be able to, the set of rules will be able to be redrafted and forwarded again for hearing.
Thank you. And in regard to board number, is it important to have more, like the 11, or would 9 work, considering the fact that when we met with the governor, he expressed concern about having to appoint board members in any instance, not just in this reform measure. But could a 9-member board member work as well as an 11 or some other number? Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, I think the number of people who are attending to the work that's put forward
is irrelevant.
Is the question. So in terms of a 9-member board, is a 9-member board appropriate for making decisions on who should or should not be moved forward within the licensing system? That's possible. It does become a little bit tricky in terms of making decisions in the teacher conduct process or the teacher ethics process if even one or two members are absent for any given meeting. But I think the question before you all at this point is really, we're asking for a lot of work in the reform of one of our state's biggest structures, and is a 9-member board appropriate for the number of people it's going to take to move to get all of the rulemaking done on the timeline that you're looking at?
Members, are there questions for Ms. Stone? Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Madam Chair, you touched briefly on it. One of my questions was around timeline. You mentioned the three different timelines, September 1, January 1. And you also mentioned getting up to speed on or getting the new teacher licensure system implemented. What is the timeline, since it's in your fiscal note, what's the timeline for getting that new system implemented, if provided we pass this legislation this session?
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, I think our best estimates are coming from our partnership with the folks at Minute at this point. The assumption is that the system would be built based on an assessment of the multiple needs that are put forward in the bill. At this point, the estimate that we're receiving is that it would take until July of 2020 to have that system done and ready to be working in our state. So that's our best guess at this point, is that in order to actually not just change the policy, but to change the implementation of the way we issue licenses, that we would need a couple of years for that system to be built and then be up and running.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know July and August are your busy times. How late does that extend into the fall? Can a board start on January 1 and do the work necessary to be ready for July? Would you suggest that we find somewhere in the middle between the two proposals for a first meeting and the beginning of rulemaking? Can you give me your thoughts on that?
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, I think in terms of the work of the new board, there's certainly going to be a learning curve for those individuals to get up to speed. So saying if a new board was stepping into place fully in January and then saying the rules would be completed by July, it's almost a complete possibility. Certainly with the best of intention, that could be a swiftly moving process, but even under the best circumstances, rulemaking is a longer process than that. I don't know that whether the board changes over in September or January. Either way, it's going to be a concern in terms of timing. One of the things that I had discussed with a number of stakeholders is the possibility for a graduated roll-off of current board members and bringing in new people to be able to expedite that timeline. And again, I just think the newness of it all poses problems to the timeline that's being put forward.
Senator Pratt.
I'll let some other members.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Pratt. I think it's going to be one of the things that we're probably going to be wrestling with here, and I appreciate the spirit in which you've asked that question. Madam Chair, if you can just indulge me very quickly, because Ms. Knowles touched on something that I'm really interested in, but I don't think we're going to get at in this bill. But you did mention it had to do with the supply and demand approach, and you threw out for us to be thinking about ways in which that work doesn't just be, my words, isolated in the new board, that there may be some wonderful opportunities to reach out to other departments in the state, particularly DEED. That does reflect the model that I've seen in other states. And so my quick question is whether or not the board has had those kind of conversations with other executive branch departments.
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, we have not yet begun to track down those in the state who are responsible for or who could be responsible for helping us with that kind of work. What we have done is assessed like entities, professional standards boards in other states to figure out how they get at the information they need to be able to share with policymakers. Are there multiple areas of support that are needed, or do they just take care of that supply and demand reporting within their teacher preparation and licensure framework? Most of them are working across state agencies to make that happen, or as I believe the department has done in the last couple of years, working with the regional education labs, or AIR, to be able to help them with some technical support. But I think there's still a lot of room for improvement, and I think we do have the expertise somewhere within our state system currently.
Representative Mariani.
Yeah, Madam Chair, once we get this bill shaped up and signed into law, this might be an area for us to for us to explore legislatively, so that this important professional pathway that we have in our state isn't just thought of in isolation from the state's entire professional, need for license for licensed professionals. And then, Madam Chair, just very quickly, Ms. Stone, I too want to echo the Chair's appreciation for your work over the last few years. I was here when you stepped in. You stepped in kind of in the middle of a whole bunch of stuff, and I thought you did a terrific job. You were always accessible to me. I suspect that was also true with both of the chairs here as well. I do appreciate your offering. You've always done this, a larger frame within which we can be assessing our policy work. And so I want to echo this frame of the combination of testing, preparation, particularly with content knowledge, and the observation of performance. I'll be using that frame as we go through this bill. And as usual, I appreciate your advice for being able to frame up public policy here that meets modern needs and that pushes us ahead. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. And we thank you, Ms. Stone, and Mr. Onstead as well, because they both will be leaving these positions, and they have spent considerable time working diligently to ensure that teachers are licensed properly and that there's good policy. So thank you very much. And best wishes to both of you as you proceed in your path for a different direction. We'd like to call down the Department of Admin at this time as our closing testifier to comment on their responsibility that's come up in this proposal. Welcome, Mr. Shearer. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Matt Shearer. I'm the legislative director at the Department of Admin. I'll direct your attention. It's a fairly brief section for admin, but we're on page R5.
Right.
In the House and Senate language. For those unfamiliar, if you don't sit on the State Government Finance Committee, admin has a division called Smart Services that provides HR and financial services for small agencies, boards, and commissions so that they can focus on their core mission. This program kind of came about a decade ago and has been seen as fairly effective at making sure that people comply with relevant laws related to HR and financial services. Just briefly wanted to note that we had followed the conversation last summer and fall, and that we were brought up, I think, by the Board of Teaching as a preferred choice for providing them with their services, and we would be happy to do that. Did want to briefly express a preference on page 5.22 to 5.23. of the House language on R5, there is the inclusion of a sentence that the Commissioner of Administration must assess the Board for services. Admin supports the House position, and I wanted to thank the Chair for working with us earlier on in the session. The 16B.371, which is referenced in that same phrase, does allow admin. It says that we may assess state agencies, but my understanding from following the committees is that the appropriations language that is in the finance bill sort of assumes that the money would be appropriated for these services. So since it's permissive in our statutes, I think this provides some needed clarity that there's the expectation of this conference committee and the Education Finance Committee that the board will be assessed for those services that we'd be providing them. So thank you, Madam
Mr.
Chair.
Are there any questions? Well, thank you very much for taking the time to join us as well.
Thank you.
Senator Pratt, before we adjourn, or are there other questions or points of discussion that members want to bring up? Because otherwise I'll turn to Senator Pratt. You have the gavel next. What is your
Thank you, Madam Chair. Certainly, my desire is to move fairly quickly on this. We are in the midst, both Representative Erickson and I and Representative Bennett are in the mix of the Education Omnibus Budget Bill as well. And so we'll do our best to schedule these in a timely manner with as much notification as possible. But understanding we have to get the budget bills resolved first. I think the goal for the next time is to at least adopt the sames and then continue to work on the similars and the differences.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. So I think I hear you say call of the chair, right?
That's right.
Members, are there any other issues to come forward? And thank you, Ms. Mara and Ms. Butler. I know we worked long and hard over the weekend. Mr. Aronson also, you worked, Mr. Cook, and my staff, and Ms. Roberts, we've all been very busy, so appreciate all the time that you're giving to this. And members in the audience, be sure you provide us with input as we proceed. With that, the meeting is adjourned.